Calling all listeners, we need you to join our dialogue on health in Maine. This is Jim Fisher of the Hancock County Planning Commission and host of Common Health. Just as sure as the sap rises in spring, the warm weather and pending summer break heralds a season of parties, dances, and recreational inebriation. Join us today as we explore some of the origins of teen drinking and drug use and the impacts on our lives and programs for safer and healthier recreational choices. Our personal health relies upon public health. Your job is to call in and join our dialogue to make Maine a healthier place to live. Call us anytime at 469-0500 or toll free at 866-65-625-9378. And I'm serious about calling in. We'd like to hear from you. The topic today is teen drinking and drug use. And we have two guests. I'd like to introduce them now. On the phone, we have Attorney General Stephen Rowe. Are you there, Steve?
Yes. Hi, Jim.
Thank you for coming. And in the studio is Michelle O'Mara, who works with the Union River Healthy Communities. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I've given a quick and somewhat dire forecast of what can happen in the spring, and I see I've missed the prom season by a few days in Hancock County, and I think we got through unscathed this year, but it's always a scary time. But why don't we start, Michelle, can you tell us a little about yourself and how you've come to become involved in this effort to deal with teen drinking and drug use?
Sure. Well, my name is Michelle O'Mara. I am the Community Health Specialist at Coastal Hancock Healthy Communities in Ellsworth. We are a program of Down East Health Services and also one of the 31 Healthy Maine Partnerships. I initially became involved in substance abuse prevention while I was in college, studying community health and also as an RA. I was able to work with the underage college population and knew that in order to prevent underage drinking and drug abuse, the education really needs to start earlier. At Healthy Communities, we're working with high school and middle school age students to get messages to them early so they can make educated, healthy decisions right from the start. And that's sort of where I began.
Stephen, a little bit of your background.
Well, I've been in public service for a number of years, but I've also been around for about 5 decades on this earth, and I've seen a lot of things, and I'm a parent and actually a grandparent. In my current job, I've come to realize the devastation that alcohol is causing among our young people, families, communities, and our state's economy. We know that alcohol is the leading cause of death among young people, particularly teenagers. We know it's a major contributor to teen suicides, homicide, sexual assaults, and certainly vehicle crashes and other sort of traumatic injuries. There's one thing that I've learned in the last couple of years, and that's the impact it has on the brain. And it actually has a tremendously negative impact. The adolescent brain has a very high addictive quality to it. And if kids start drinking earlier, the chances of them becoming alcoholic are much greater than if they wait. And the other problem is, It can actually cause damage, which in many cases is irreversible to the brain. So we're losing human potential because of youth alcohol consumption. I was talking the other day, Jim and Michelle, to a couple of physicians who deal with children, and there were neurologists that work with young people, and they said that alcoholism is a major pediatric disease in the state of Maine. And that's a pretty bold statement, but I know it's true.
Well, is it? I guess as an attorney general, you're dealing with any number of issues of the law in the state. Is this an initiative that you've taken on personally, or is this something that every attorney general's grappled with?
Well, I guess what I did a couple of years ago, I went to the president of National Association of Attorneys General, which we refer to as NAG, and I asked that we start a committee looking at this, and I was appointed the chair. We're now 2 years old. We have 28 attorneys general as members of our committee. And our focus is really on reducing underage drinking across this country. We're trying to reduce youth interest in alcohol and their access to alcohol. So I've tried to play a leadership role nationally in this effort. But certainly here in the state, I've been trying to get out and about at community forums and talk about the problem. And the answer, I'm not the answer. I mean, the answer has to be a community answer because the problem is a community problem. And it's people like you and Michelle and parents and teachers and school administrators and law enforcement officers and the community coming together to say we have to do something about this problem. It's killing our kids. It's maiming our kids. I know I'm sounding kind of stark because this is a real problem. And I often say, even if you don't have a heart, you have a pocketbook and you pay taxes. And youth consumption of alcohol is directly increasing our taxes because of all the remedial spending that we do here in the state.
Well, it is some distinction to be the chairman of a NAGS group. I
don't like that either, NAGS.
No. I think it's great. I want to remind listeners to please call in. You can reach us toll-free at 866-625-9378. In understanding the dimensions of the problem, I know Hancock County, which is the county where WERU is based, though we reached a number of other counties in the state, we have had a couple of recent newsworthy events, and both, I think, all somewhat embarrassing to the county. One was a sting operation, and I don't know if you were involved in that, but it's quite remarkable that I believe 8 out of 8 stores that were an underage buyer visited the stores and successfully purchased alcohol in them. Was the Attorney General's office involved in that?
No, we were not involved in that, but I certainly am aware of it, and it is very depressing. I mean, selling alcohol to minors is nothing new. It's happened as long as we can remember, but it ought not to be happening, and certainly that's not a record to be proud of. We're working now. I know the Department of Public Safety is working on beefing up and rolling out a new compliance program. Hopefully that'll be underway soon, and we can give some support to local law enforcement in terms of conducting these compliance checks. Unfortunately, a lot of folks, unless they think they're going to get caught, they won't conduct, you know, the necessary training. We've got to make sure our clerks at all our stores are trained to do the appropriate carding, to make sure we're not selling to minors. That's a depressing fact, and I hope the next time that's done, we see a tremendous improvement.
Michelle, now I think your group has done some work with local vendors. I think more on tobacco, but can you tell me a little bit about those programs?
Sure. A couple of our youth groups do a regular sticker shock. And what sticker shock is where you take stickers that show the legal consequences of supplying or buying for youth minors. And we take these youth groups with these stickers and go to these local vendors, you know, Hannaford or wherever, and they actually sticker the alcohol packages or the bottles themselves, so that people are more aware and they see, you know, maybe if someone has been asked by a minor to go and purchase alcohol for them, you know, maybe the person will rethink their decision when they go in and see, you know, this is going to be my consequence if I buy alcohol for a minor. So I think that programs like this are pretty effective. I mean, I hope that they are.
And the penalties are pretty severe if you're caught supplying alcohol to minors. The other embarrassing piece of news for Hancock County was a recent arrest. I guess we'd call it an arrest of about 50 underage drinkers who were caught at various parties. And one of the tools, it's technology bringing itself forward to facilitate an old problem, and that is the use of the internet and MySpace.com, other kinds of internet message boards to arrange these parties. I'm not sure if that's indicative of statewide. I think it's certainly been a problem in Hancock County in the past, where we have so many summer camps and houses that are unoccupied most of the year, provides a ready space for parties. Is this a problem in other parts of the state, Steve?
Yes, it is. There are some communities that have been doing some great work, and we've seen the number of these parties, whether they call them pit parties, keg parties, whatever we've seen them go down. If kids think they will be caught, they're less likely to drink. I mean, that's the rule. They need to believe that they're going to be caught. So therefore, we have to be vigilant. When somebody hears about one of these, whether it's another young person, a teacher, a parent, tell someone, tell the law enforcement, so they can break this up before they start. You know, it's no fun for law enforcement to go out and to arrest these kids, and it's no fun for the kids to be arrested. If kids think they're going to be caught, they won't drink, and that's real important. So, you know, the other thing, I go around and I talk to young people, Jim and Michelle, a lot, and I ask them, you know, why do they drink, and they give very different reasons. But it just seems like it's more than just accepted. In some of these social cultures, in some communities, it's sort of expected. And we've got to change the culture where you don't have to drink to be popular. It's not the thing to do. You know, and I know know Michelle has worked on that, and a lot of communities are. But I guess what I want to say is, you know, these beer parties, they're nothing new, but we're seeing more of them, and kids are drinking more aggressively. And when you drink aggressively, you soak your brain with alcohol, and you build up an addiction. You become addicted. And once you become addicted, it's very tough to shake.
Yeah, it's when we try to get our arms around the question of prevalence of alcohol use by teenagers, we're essentially asking in a variety of ways about an illegal activity. So it's never easy to get the right information. But from a public health perspective, and certainly from a policy perspective, we want to know how much is going on, and then subsequently, if we've done some kind of program to prevent drinking or to make it more difficult or raise perceptions that you might be caught, we want to know if it works. And if we don't know how many people are drinking now, and then we might not know if the program worked later on. So I think about the kinds of measures, and I don't know if at the state level you're doing this. Do you look at the percentage of teens who ever drink, or do you look at the percentage of teens who drink regularly? Are you looking at frequency or the amount they drink? There are a lot of things you could be measuring.
Well, we have the MIDAS, which is the Maine Youth Drug and Alcohol Survey, which is on the OSA website, the Office of Substance Abuse. And I can talk a little about that. Michelle,
Well, actually, we have a caller on the line, but let's get back to MIDAS in a minute. Caller, are you in?
I'm here.
And what's your question or comment?
Yeah, I just wish that you would just say drugs instead of drugs and alcohol, and pretend, you know, implying that alcohol is not a drug. I hear this and see this across the media, and it's... I'm sure Seagram's et al. And Anheuser-Busch promote it. But, you know, alcohol's a drug, so let's just say drugs and not alcohol and drugs, okay? Or I would like that.
Thank you for your comment.
Okay, thank you.
It's a good point. Why do we make the distinction?
We should not. I agree with the caller. Alcohol is the leading drug problem among our young people in this state, in this nation. It is a drug. We ought to call it that. It's number one by far among young people. So, and the other thing about alcohol, it is the gateway drug. Kids that are doing they're doing pill popping, they're doing meth, they're doing cocaine. They're starting with alcohol, and many times they start with it, but on a regular basis, they're starting the evening with alcohol before they move on to other drugs. So, for so many reasons, it's a problem. But it is a drug, and we ought to call it that.
Yeah, and you know, the distinction in names is important. I think, right from the federal level down, programs are often funded either to deal with alcohol or drugs. And
guess why? you haven't seen until you've been to the Congress and seen the lobby of this industry, you would realize why we do that. But alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. It goes straight to the brain, and it attacks the brain. And I think, you know, Jim, one of the reasons the industry has caused us to say drugs and alcohol, we ought to just say drugs.
We have another caller on the line. Please come in.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'd just like to say I agree with all the things that have been said so far, but I think one of the things that prevention types of programs need to think about is alcohol and drugs are one of the few things that kids see as rites of passage into adulthood in a culture that we don't have any established rites of passage. So that's one of the things they tend to use it for. And then another thing is, you know, the kids who are saying yes to something are the kids who are less likely to be involved with drugs and alcohol. And this whole idea that it hasn't been brought up in this show yet, but the whole idea of just say no, you know, when you think of it in your own life, it's a lot harder to just say no to something. But if you're saying yes to something else, which means that you reject that other thing, that's a lot easier to go. So, you know, a lot of things that kids could participate in, music and drama and sports and all those things are getting harder and harder for kids to participate in school and outside of school because of funding sources. And if we could look at it in the big picture of what we could give kids, and as opposed to what we're constantly setting up as what they cannot do, would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, Michelle, is the Just Say No campaign got any roots anymore? Is it left predates you? That was Nancy Reagan's initiative, which may predate Michelle too. Thank you for your comment. I think we have another caller, so we'll take that one and we'll try to back up and cover some of these issues. Caller, please, your comment or question.
Oh, yes, I have a comment. I was just calling. I'm a counselor. I'm not specifically trained as an alcohol and drug counselor, even though that was a little bit of my general education. And one thing I would say is just to say that you need more education without specifying what kind of education you need is a problem. I think a part of the big problem is that the education out there right now isn't really doing the job. I think kids aren't being given honest information about the drugs. I think all the drugs are being lumped together in one category, and the entire category is being just labeled as bad, and they aren't being honestly informed about what to expect when they try the different drugs. And I think this makes people, the educators in the school system and law enforcement, lose their credibility in the eyes of young people if you tell a child all these drugs are really bad and they're all addictive and, you know, it's going to ruin your life. And then the kid tries some marijuana and, you know, the kid smokes marijuana maybe for a couple months and, you know, it maybe makes him a little less motivated, a little fuzzy-headed sometimes, but the kid sees that he can still kind of function doing this. Next time someone comes up and says, you know, why don't you try this meth or this crystal meth or something of that nature? You know, maybe in the kid's mind, you know, the kid thinks, well, I feel like I was lied to about marijuana. Maybe I'll go ahead and give the crystal meth a try. So I think that we aren't really honest in the way that we present the facts about drugs and the consequences of using different drugs, because they're not all the same. And I think if the education was more honest, then the education would have more credibility in the kids' eyes when they received it. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that there's a good book called Drugs, Chocolate, the Morphine. It's and in the introduction to that, this book, these two drug counselors and scientists, you know, give a brief introduction where they're talking about, you know, drugs aren't bad or good. It's, you know, it's the relationship, the drugs that are bad or good. And some drugs are almost impossible to have a good relationship with. Hence, you know, there a lot of those drugs are illegal. And it is interesting to note in studies that kids most likely to be abuse alcohol are kids either who have parents that are alcoholics or kids who have parents that are teetotalers, because they've never seen what a responsible relationship to alcohol looks like. And that would also fits in with, if you look at Europe, you can see that the adults there model responsible relationships to alcohol better than the adults here do in this country. So as far as alcohol goes, I think it's almost inevitable that they're going to come into contact with that, especially because it's so commercially advertised in our society. So what they really need is a model of how to have a responsible relationship to alcohol, not just telling them not to drink alcohol, because I think inevitably they're not going to follow that.
Well, thank you for your comments. Attorney General Roe, would you like to respond to these?
Well, I would say the only responsible relationship with alcohol for a young person is not to consume. A child who starts drinking before age 15 is four times more likely to become addicted to alcohol than if he or she waited until they were 21. The adolescent brain is very different than the adult brain in terms of the structural development that's occurring. And the chances of creating addiction and the chances of creating some permanent impairment in the brain are much, much greater for a kid that's 13, 14, 15, 16, even up to 20 than it is for an adult. And so we can't, I mean, this idea of responsible modeling, I agree. Parents are role models, and they ought to be good role models. But I hope that the caller isn't saying that, you know, using it in moderation, whether it be alcohol or any other drug, is okay for a minor. It's not. And certainly for drugs that are illegal, I certainly don't advocate using those in moderation or any other way. But alcohol is a legal drug. If you're 21 and over and you use it, you know, responsibly, there's no question. What I'm talking about today are children. And children's brains are different than adult brains. And I don't mean to be preachy, but that's just a fact. I've talked to so many physicians, I've read so much, and I see so many kids who have been effective, and now they're developmentally disabled because of their chronic use of alcohol. So I understand the caller was very sincere, and I appreciate that and all, but I know and I hope he wasn't saying that using it in moderation as a young person is okay.
Good. We have another caller on the line. Please state your question or comment.
Good morning. I wonder if sort of along the same line as the last caller, I wonder if anybody there has any sort of statistics on alcoholism rates in Europe. I mean, Europe takes a very different view of alcohol than the United States does. And, in my opinion, a much more responsible one, and one that really provides a much better, does provide a much better role model for kids. I sort of wonder too if the real answer to kids under 21 drinking is not by law, because obviously that isn't working, but really by a shift in the way society views the use of alcohol, more perhaps towards that of Europe. So I wonder if anybody there has any actual numbers to see if that model works better. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Great question. It actually brings us back to where we were about three calls ago, which is how do we know? I mean, how do we know when a behavior is illegal? And just as difficult, how do we know when somebody has become alcohol dependent? As it's a gray area where some kids can very quickly slide into really requiring alcohol to have a good time at a party. Others can manage some kind of social relationship, but not many. At that age, it's probably, I would agree with the Attorney General, probably not a good thing to recommend. But I don't know if we have good data from European countries that's comparable to data in this country. Are you aware of any, Attorney General?
Well, it's interesting. I was with a senior class in Buckfield last week, and they were debating, and one side was we should lower the drinking age, and the other was we should keep it. And the group that was advocating lowering it was looking to some of the European nations, but actually the data does indicate that European countries have similar or higher rates of alcohol-related problems compared with this country. I mean, that's the research that I have seen. People can check it out themselves. You can look at individual nations. There's one or two that do not, but most of them do have. The problem is as bad or worse than it is in this country, and in many cases it's worse. And they have, as you know, Europe has higher driving, legal driving ages, so they see that may make a difference there. But the problems are as bad or worse. And in our neighbor to the north, Canada, we also see problems that are as bad or worse than in this country, in many cases worse in different provinces where the legal drinking age is different. I think it's 18 in Quebec, it's 19 in Brunswick. With respect to the measuring of the, yes, we have that MIDAS, which is the Main Youth Drug and Alcohol Survey, and they're doing another one now. Every 2 years they do that, but the last one showed that 22% of eighth graders were taking a drink of alcohol at least once a month. It was 40% of 10th graders and 50% of seniors. About half seniors were drinking at least once a month. The data revealed that about 30%, about 3 in 10 seniors were binge drinking once every 2 weeks. That's five or more drinks in a row. Now, these are how kids are reporting, and there is some science that goes into this to eliminate, the misrepresentations. I understand it's accurate. OSA has it done. Those figures are kind of disturbing, but on the other hand, they're not surprising based on what I see in our society. But finally, I just wanted to add also the one person who made the comment about it's a rite of passage. That's right. It is considered that way. And And this is, I mean, I don't want to, this is a societal norm. We've got to change it. The fact is, most kids don't drink. The statistics I just gave, the majority is on the other side. They don't drink. They don't binge drink. 70% don't binge drink once every 2 weeks. So we've got to raise up those kids that are not drinking, not engaging in drug activity, and celebrate them and make that the norm. And I think we're starting to do that in communities across the state.
We have another caller on the line. Sorry to keep you waiting. Do you have a question or comment?
I do have a comment. I think we're hemming and hawing a lot about statistics. I think the bottom line is alcohol is a part of life, and it's there. And I have a question. What about the end of a day in a child's mind does he or she feel is incomplete and needs to go out and consume in any substances? And I think that is on the responsibility of the parents to get children involved in hobbies, sports, arts, things that bring enjoyment. So at the end of the day, they are content and ready to go to bed without feeling the need for substance abuse or substance use. I'm 23 years old, and I've drank a lot, and I've smoked a lot, and I've done a lot, and I don't do that anymore, and I wonder where our parents are at the end of the day with their children and why the children feel the need to go out and do these things.
Well, thank you for your call. You raise a lot of important questions, and I apologize about the statistics, but Common Health is a program about public health, and one of the things we need to understand is health is not always an individual issue, though individuals certainly have problems with alcohol and drugs, but also it's a societal problem. If we're going to intervene, we have to get a sense of whether our interventions are working or not. I would encourage other people to call. Not that we're having any shortage of calls, but you can reach us at 866-625-9378. And I believe we have another caller on the line.
Yes, hi, Jim. I realize that the perceived norms in the eyes of a young person is a very powerful motivator for them to behave the way that they think their friends are behaving, and that we know there are a lot of misperceptions about that. And I wondered if Michelle would talk a little bit about social norms marketing and what that's all about and why the messages are a little bit different than the messages that you see in the regular media.
Thank you for your call. Michelle.
Sure. Well, one basic concept of social norms is to really focus on the amount of students who are making healthy decisions in their life. You know, in Hancock County, we do have over half of the students grades 6 through 12 that have never tried alcohol in their life. They've never experimented. And I agree with Attorney General Rowe. We need to celebrate those people. We need to realize that, you know, alcohol is a problem, and we still need to focus on the 27% of students in grades 6 through 12 who have experimented with alcohol, but really take a more positive approach and say, you know, most of our kids are making healthy decisions, and you know, students' perceptions are usually a lot worse than the actual use that's going on. You know, if a student thinks that three-quarters of their peers are drinking, you know, they might try and conform to that invisible norm by going out and experimenting with alcohol themselves. And we really need to get the message. It's feeding back the actual data to the student, saying, you know, not everybody is drinking. You know, most people are making healthy choices, and those are some of the concepts of social norms marketing. And actually, in Ellsworth, we have started a social norms campaign as of January as part of an essential services grant that we received from the Office of Substance Abuse. And we're going to be working really hard to get those messages out.
How do you get the messages out? What specifically do you do to tell? Because there's always a question of whether a teenager is going to believe you. But what? How do you tell them what these numbers and?
Well, we've actually worked with Dr. David Craig, who is professor of biochemistry and alcohol education project director at Hobart and William Smith Colleges in Geneva, New York. And we just finished, I know that he's worked around Hancock County and many, many other places across the entire United States, social norm surveys of students.
sorry to make that short, but we have two more callers on the line. Let's take the first caller. Question or comment, please. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What's your question or comment?
Well, the comment, that the young woman there was real sharp. I was just listening to her. But my comment is, I mean, the state's not in the liquor business any longer, but it must have been confusing for people that when I always talk about alcohol problems and the state was always selling the liquor. I mean, you could go buy it there and then get arrested by the state for abusing it. It's kind of a, you know, it's kind of like the same with lottery tickets. Nobody wants gambling, but the state's the biggest person in the gambling business. That's my comment. Thank you very much.
That's an important point. We have another caller. I guess we'll just keep rolling. Your comment or question?
Yes, I was the second caller that called. I just called to clarify some of my statement. I was just not advocating that anyone under 21 use alcohol, but that, you know, just be realistic about the fact that they eventually will be legal drinkers. So just to say, you know, not to drink alcohol without giving them some idea of what a responsible relationship to alcohol looks like is probably only doing half the job, because some of the kids, unfortunately, won't get that information from their parents. They won't. Your parents aren't going to model for them what a responsible relationship to alcohol looks like. And if the schools did that, that could be really helpful for some of the students when they do turn 21 who don't have that model at home. And the other thing I was saying is I was also not advocating anyone use drugs, but I think the school has to be realistic about the fact that some of the kids are going to use drugs. And if the information they've given them about certain drugs is incorrect, then all the education, then everything that they've said loses their credibility. So they really need to be, like, bluntly honest about the effects of different drugs and not just lump them all together in one some category. And I was wondering if someone could comment on that, on having more honest, more bluntly honest education about the effects of the different drugs and being honest about kids about what to suspect when they use them, what to expect.
Great points. Thank you for calling back. Stephen Rowe, would you like to respond?
Well, no, I'm glad he clarified that, and I assumed that's what he meant. I didn't mean to insinuate he didn't. No, I agree. I mean, if we have information, it ought to be out there. Kids are smart, and we ought to make sure they have information. But I like the fact that he clarified that we're not advocating that anybody use drugs that are illegal. And certainly it's illegal for anyone under 21 to consume alcohol. It's illegal for anyone with respect to the other drugs. I think we're talking about the non-prescription drugs, whether we're talking about, any of those that are, a lot of the pills that are out there that are not prescribed, certainly methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, marijuana, any of these other illegal drugs, they are illegal for a reason. And I'm not going to, you know, I mean, I'll leave it there. But I do think it is important that kids have accurate information. And, you know, you can get different information about different drugs, but certainly it's important that we have the accurate information. The only thing just on alcohol I wanted to add, to go back to a couple of comments, I love what Michelle said about perceived norms. It is perceived. It's not true. Most kids don't drink. I also think it's important that, you know, why do kids drink? A lot of it is because of what we do as parents. We're not the greatest. We're not the greatest role models. We may leave alcohol around the house. We may leave it in the refrigerator in the basement. We may wear shirts that have beer companies on them or ball caps. It's also society. If you look at the advertising with the industry, I mean, watch a Red Sox game, a Brewers game, a Celtics game. Watch any sporting event. Read any magazine. You see alcohol is everywhere. And I have been working on this national committee with the industry, and particularly with the leaders in the industry, and I've met with a number of CEOs of beer companies and distilled spirits companies to try to get them to change their marketing. So they only market in, you know, where the viewership, readership is a real low percentage of under. you know, the lemonade, and that's also disturbing because a lot of the kids who are drinking this are kids. They're under 21. So anyway, I think society is sending this, you know, signal, and it's kind of hard to counteract that. So that's why the community needs to come together and say, we've got to change these norms, these perceived norms, because they're not accurate.
Michelle, you got started, and I kind of cut you off earlier talking about this difference between what an anthropologist might think of as a norm, as a sort of cultural value, or rite of passage for that matter, versus a more sociological definition, which is how many are actually doing it? Is a majority really doing this? And tell us a little more about how you're using this more quantitative approach to influence teens' understanding of what's going on in their world.
Yeah, well, when we receive survey results back, we are actually going to be displaying some of these messages that we generate from the surveys about students' perceptions and the actual behaviors that they're engaging in on screensavers. This is just one of our programs. But instead of just having alcohol or other substances on these screensavers, you know, saying that, you know, most people are not drinking, but 3/4 of you say believe that, you know, most people are drinking. That's not actual data. But we're also going to have, I think it was Attorney General Rowe who said it before, or one of the callers, you know, information on other student accomplishments, you know, theater and sports and just getting those messages out there to create a better sense of community.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. And actually, I think you could say we've had a lot of calls, and one theme that's come through is that the callers, I believe, almost without exception, are looking for some alternatives. They're looking for positive roles, but they're looking for things for teenagers to do. And it certainly is indicated in research that we've done that boredom, not having something to do after school, is a real problem. And it brings to mind a particular debate I recall hearing in one high school recently where it's fairly standard policy in most high schools that teens caught consuming alcohol are kicked off their teams, at least for some period of time. And that's a way to enforce, I suppose, to create some penalty for illegal behavior and unhealthy behavior. At the same time, now they have nothing to do during that time slot, and a great many other teens have no aren't in sports and don't have an extracurricular activity. So, what kinds of things can we do to fill that void? I don't know if Michelle, if you've got any programs, or if any callers want to come in with some ideas, or Attorney General Rowe.
Well, I guess I can start. We do have starting off with just tobacco. I know that we're working at Coastal Hancock Healthy Communities with the district attorney's office for a juvenile tobacco diversion program, where instead of having this on the student's record and having to pay a large fine, what they can do is they can come to this program, which is 4 hours of educational materials around tobacco, you know, advertising and health effects and, you know, the social effects and even legal consequences of using tobacco. And then we do a couple hours of community service in the afternoon also, sort of get them so that they can make more educated decisions. And I think that education is a big part of this. You know, rather than kicking them out of school for an extended period of time, we need to give them the knowledge to make right decisions about their past behaviors or their future behaviors.
We have another caller on the line. Please share your question or comment.
Yes, hi, my name is Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, my name is Bill. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've got about 27 years behind me. And the thing that saddens me most about your program, after listening to everybody, is I'm hearing nobody talk about the disease factor of alcoholism. Alcoholism is a disease. And, you know, alcohol doesn't, if you drink alcohol, it doesn't make you addictive alcoholic. It's only addictive for addictive people. The gateway drug, of course, is going to be not drinking, but obviously smoking. You know, our history is just so full. Two or 300 years ago, everyone in this country was staggering around all day long drunk. So things have come a long way. We need more information to the kids about the disease and its symptoms. Alcoholism is only a symptom of the disease, along with overeating, gambling, you know, you name it. We still live in a society down here, at least in down East Maine, where law enforcement is totally ignorant about the disease concept. They're still giving drunks a ride home. And as long as we live in a society that still laughs when they see a drunk and makes fun of it, we're never going to solve this problem. Thanks.
Well, thank you for your call. Stephen Rowe, you've been quiet for a long time. Do you have any comments?
I would agree. Alcoholism is clearly a disease. There's no question about that, and we need to treat it as that. Some young people may have, and you can. There's a lot of literature on this. May have a predisposition because of their genetic makeup, their parents, and all. But still, if we can keep kids away from alcohol, I'm just looking at statistics. The adolescent brain is much more addictive than the adult brain. If you look at national statistics, and I know we've thrown a lot out, and the last caller, I want to applaud him for his recovery program and for, you know, giving that testimony. But if for every 100 adult alcoholics in this country, 96 of them, according to all the statistics I can find, 96 of them started drinking before they were 21. That means that if you wait until the legal drinking age to start drinking, the chances of you developing this disease and the manifestations of it are much lower. Now, those aren't my statistics. That's what I read. And I would like to ask, you know, Bill, I bet Bill started drinking before he was 21. Many people who are adult alcoholics, recovering or not, and as I just said, more than 9 out of 10 started when they were kids. And so I'm just looking at statistics because they help tell us what we ought to do. And I agree with most everything that's been said. We've got to change the way we look at this, offer more options to kids. You know, I ask kids, why do you drink? And they say, well, I'm bored. There's a lot of stress. I become more uninhibited. It's available. My parents make it available. Different things. It's, you know, I see the ball games. We need to really help kids understand there are other options, but also, you know, this issue, I'm bored. Why are they bored? And it's easy for me to say, listen, I've had four kids, and they've all gone through the teenage years, and I've had two boys, and I know what it is. I understand the issues with alcohol. I mean, I'm a real parent. I've had real kids, and we've had our struggles in different ways. But
at the same time, we have a caller who's suggesting that we sometimes go overboard in our health education classes. We make claims that kids just don't believe based on their personal experience, and that's a tough thing, because alcoholism, like any addiction, tends to sneak up on people. They don't think there's any problem until they're pretty far into it. And I'm curious what I'd love to have a call from a health educator to help us understand how we can walk this tricky path between being alarmist and saying these are real problems, and on the other hand saying, but you may not experience them right away, and we need to model correct behavior. It's tough business. Michelle, tell us a little bit more about programs you're planning for working with youth in the future. I know I can talk a little bit about a planning grant we're working on, but what are you doing right now and planning to do?
Sure. Well, in the past, starting in 2003, we were, like I said before, we do work with a number of partners, Maine Office of Substance Abuse, definitely. And in 2003, we were awarded a One Maine grant where we were able to bring a number of science-based programs to all of Hancock County. We had programs, for example, Communities Mobilizing for Change on Alcohol, Creating Lasting Family Connections, and the Second Step Program, which is a violence prevention program, and also the Coordinated School Health Program in Ellsworth. I just want to mention that the Coordinated School Health Program, each of the 31 Healthy Maine partnerships has a coordinated school health program where they try and, well, one of the objectives of the coordinated school health program is to have a certified professional health teacher so that they are getting the correct information about these. I know that one of the previous callers had stated, you know, making sure that this information, the correct information, goes out to students. And that's one of the goals. We need to get that correct education, and by hiring certified health teachers, you know, we can make sure that we're getting that information to students. Like I said, we also are starting a social norms campaign, and we are also bringing Communities Mobilizing for Change on Alcohol to Ellsworth. We'd like to work with parents and retailers and other community members because it is a community problem. We need to work with retailers to prevent underage access, parents to reduce access in the home, not provide a place for youth to drink, and reinforce that underage drinking and drug use is unacceptable right from the start, right from an early age. Be vocal with your kids. We've also been working with law enforcement, and I'm happy to report that the Ellsworth Police Department now has a written policy on underage drinking. So we applaud their efforts. And we also just had a countywide summit on underage drinking about 2 weeks ago, and we were fortunate to have Attorney General Rowe attend and speak about, you know, some of the dangers of underage drinking and reinforce that it does need to be a community effort.
I want to remind listeners that you can call in. We've got a few more minutes. Call us at 866-625-9378. So a lot of programs at the local level. And Steve, you've been going all over the state talking about underage drug use and drinking. What plans do you have in the near future?
Well, I've just been attending. And I've been invited to many of them, and I've spoken. Obviously, I want to. I'm not an expert. I don't have a PhD in any of this, but I feel strongly, as hopefully you can tell, that this is a real problem. And so, what I'm just trying to do is to get the communities sort of excited about the problem and concerned, and get them to come together. We find that parents are disengaged with the teachers of their young sons or daughters, and others in the community. We've got to bring everyone together. One of the things I'm talking to parents about is listen to your kids. I talk with so many young kids, particularly teenagers, and I say, what would you like your parents to do that would help you with these issues? And I say, I wish they would listen to me. Not talk at me, but actually listen to me and ask me about the stresses that I have in my life. Many of our young kids, they have the academics, they have problems, you know, relationships with other kids in the schools, they have extracurricular activities. They may have jobs, they do. There are a lot of stressors on our young people in this state. And, you know, alcohol is seen as a release for some of these kids. It's a way that can relieve the stress. And so parents need to do a better job listening and to do a better job as role models. The other thing with parents I would just say is you need to make rules for your children. Kids need boundaries. They like boundaries. Mary Herman, Governor King's wife, said at a forum the other night, she said, boundaries are like hugs. Kids need them and they want them. And so I just think parents ought to know that and get to know your kids' teachers, know the local law enforcement. I mean, back in the old days in the small communities, everyone knew everyone and everyone knew who this young person was, where they lived, and we've kind of moved away from that now. And it is all about community. I mean, it sounds kind of sappy, but I think that's really what it is. So my purpose in going to these is to trying to get the communities sort of sort of up in arms and working in a positive way to do a lot of things, create alternative activities for these young people, to hold up the kids that aren't drinking, to really, you know, to hug these kids and say, you know, we want to protect you. So just if you can wait. If you want to drink, you drink later. You can wait.
Great. We have two more callers on the line, so we'll invite the first caller in now. What's your question or comment?
Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, this is Peggy. Okay. I hope I'm not opening another can of worms, but I think it's one that needs to be looked at.
As long as it's not a can of beer, we're okay.
Right. Okay. The kids watch a lot of TV, and there are numerous ads on TV for if you've got this problem or that problem, talk to your doctor and he'll prescribe you a medication. That's legal, but I'm sure that there are pills floating around out there that kids shouldn't be getting their hands on. Methylphenidate is a big thing now because if kids are antsy and anxious, they can get prescribed medication to keep them sitting in their seat. I have some issues with that, but I know that there's a need for that. But at the same time, if we kind of look at it from a bigger picture, we seem to have a society that is extremely dependent on fixing things with swallowing pills. And if you've got a society where that's, you know, the fixer, and these kids are looking at a stressful future. I'm sorry, but we haven't really probably addressed everything, so maybe you'll do another show. I know kids who are really bright and very, and at an early age, you know, are worried about the environment. They're worried about a lot of things. And very often our society tends to drag ourselves up when we don't like to look at the future, you know? So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I mean, you could ask whether Ritalin might also be a gateway drug for some kids.
Right.
Michelle wanted to make a comment, then we have another caller.
Okay. Sure.
Thank
I
you
actually,
for your call.
Yes, I appreciate those comments. I actually used to work in a pharmacy, and I was just going to sort of agree that I've seen that prescriptions have been rising a lot, and, you know, drug abuse definitely, it needs to be, we just need to pay attention to these issues. That prescription drug abuse, you know, that's still drug abuse, and it's a serious issue, and we need to pay attention to it. So,
we have another caller on the line. Come in with your question or comment, please.
Hi, excellent show. I'm a father of a 16-year-old, and we live up in Aroostook County. And my son back in middle school got involved with a program, and it's called the Aroostook Teen Leadership Conference, and it's sponsored by Aroostook Mental Health Center, and Jack Foster is the person heading it up. And it's just been the best thing for him. And it the message of the program is, you know, don't drink, don't do drugs. And it's a week-long summer conference camp situation.
Well,
and the kids that are there, they learn leadership, they learn, you know, the power that they have themselves and making their own decisions and not giving in to peer pressure. And it's really too bad that more middle school kids, you know, can't be exposed to a program like this.
How can people learn more about this program? We're a little short on time, but I'd like for people
sure.
to have a web address or a phone number, something like that.
Well, I can just give you names. It's Aroostook Mental Health Center out of Caribou, Maine.
Okay.
And Jack Foster is the person heading up the program.
Well, that sounds like an interesting alternative. So a week-long retreat sounds like for kids.
Excellent stuff. It's really powerful and empowering.
That's great. I think we have one more caller on the line with a question or comment. Come in, please.
Hello. My name is Tim Fuller. I work with Healthy Acadia, one of the Healthy Community Coalitions and over in Bar Harbor. And I just wanted to sort of speak to the question that you had asked about Jim. About how do we get the information to kids in a way that it's, you know, I think you're asking for health educators to call in. I'm not a health educator, but I'm working with the schools with some of the health teachers, but also science teachers and social studies teachers through service learning, and that's one of the approaches that we've taken here in the Unit 98 schools. We're working on a project in collaboration with Kids Consortium and the Office of Substance Abuse to promote service learning projects in the schools with 6th to 12th graders where they actually, rather than just having the health teachers give them the information, they're actually investigating the problem themselves and looking for community-wide solutions as a group.
That's great. I want to tell listeners, because we're just about out of time, that you can learn more about Healthy Acadia. They have a website, which is healthyacadia.org. And thank you for your call. We're going to squeeze in one more quick call, then we're going to have to go to closing comments. Please, what's your question or comment?
I'm from Connors Emerson School, and we're doing a project on underage drinking.
Oh, great.
It teaches people about the things that can happen to you if you drink. And we're showing our project at the Augusta Showcase. It's on May 19th, this Friday, 9:45 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the State Capitol Building in the Hall of Flags. Also, if you want to come to the Underage Drinking Forum at the Southwest Harbor Middle School on Mount Desert Island, it's from 7 o'clock to 9 p.m.
Same day, on Friday?
Nope, on May 25th.
May 25th. How can people get information? Do you have something on the Internet or a phone number they can call?
Right now, if you call Connors Emerson, and you can ask for Mr. Gable Richards, which the number here is 288-3631.
288-3631?
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you for your call.
Okay.
Boy, this has been a busy day. We've had a lot of calls, a lot of great comments, and I'm sorry we couldn't answer all of the questions, but I'd like to give Attorney General Roe a minute to sum up if he has any final comments.
Well, Jim, I just want to thank you for hosting the show, and Michelle, and all of your some informed listeners in Hancock County, and I want to thank everyone who's working on this problem. I always say, again, I just would say, there's no one group that can fix this. It's not just the parents. It's not just the police. It's not just the educators. It's the community working together, and there are a lot of things we need to do. Our kids are our most precious resource, and we need to make sure that they enter adulthood healthy, and that requires some work. So I just want to thank you for hosting the show, and it's been my pleasure to participate today.
And we thank you for being here for us all day, all hour. That's great. Thank you for taking the time. Michelle, some final comments?
Sure. I just want to thank you also for letting us be a part. And I also want to agree with Attorney General Rose's comments. We need to really step back and look and see how we can change the culture. It is a community problem, and it needs a community solution. Not one group is going to change underage drinking or drug use. Parents get involved, retailers, find out how you can do more. Anybody who's interested, you can call our office, the Coastal Hancock Healthy Communities in Ellsworth, at 667-5352, or check us out online at www.healthycom.org. And also for Maine Youth Drug and Alcohol Use Survey results, the MIDOS, you can check those results online, www.maine.gov/DHHS/OSA.
Well, we've come to the end of our program for this month. Be sure to visit our website, commonhealth.org, where you will find helpful background on a variety of public health topics, including audio archives and a place for you to contribute questions for our future shows. Common Health theme music is Picaba, performed by Eric Horshack. Thanks to our guests, Stephen Rowe and Michelle O'Meara. Thanks to Amy Brown for engineering and to our underwriters and members for supporting all of our public affairs and news programs. Common Health airs on the third Wednesday of the month from 10 to 11 with support from the Hancock County Planning Commission, the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and the Hancock County Coalition for Community Health. Join us on June 21st for a dialogue about terrorism, emergencies, and natural disasters. We'll learn more about public health under the most trying conditions and the network of people and programs who are working together to provide aid. Thanks for listening and for your suggestions for future programs. Email us at commonhealth@weru.org. Stay tuned for On the Wing with your host, Sister Mango. This is Jim Fisher wishing you good health.